This is WBAI-FM in New York.
I played a piece, John Cage's, called WBAI. And so for me, WBAI is fixed in my mind as being a kind of progressive, intelligent, on the ball, witty area of broadcasting. And I guess certainly the conversation we've had just now seems to confirm that probably is the case.
This is Richard Belzer. Since the 1960s, when I wanted to be really informed, aside from the mainstream, I listened to WBAI. I got war news, I got news on the civil rights movement, I got copy from news sources that weren't generally used by the mainstream in America. It helped educate me and shape my thoughts, and I hope that you contribute and listen to this station because it's an important part of what America was supposed to be all about. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ben Gillette of Penn & Teller, and you're listening to WBAI, listener-supported radio.
In New York City.
Hi, this is Tony Bennett.
WBAI.
WBAI-FM.
The soundtrack of New York City.
If you put it on, if you put it on.
It's good! It's good!
Hi, this is Dina Colbert. Join me and my co-host Bill DeFazio on Wednesday mornings from 11 a.m. to 12 noon for City Watch. City Watch is part of the Same Boat Coalition. We are concerned with social and economic justice and cultural issues, working to democratize the city's political process and the general welfare of all New Yorkers. City Watch provides clear and useful information for listeners so that we all can better participate in our city. Remember, we all are in the same boat. So tune in to City Watch, Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 12 noon.
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Well, maybe a wonderful world, but it's a rotten studio where nothing seems to be working right. Assuming the next button actually does something, what you will hear is the theme to the next program, Off the Hook. Hey, how about that?
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
It's Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening where, you know, every week it's a different thing. You know, every week I think there's some kind of a law that says that no matter what time, I could leave at noon and I'd still get here 5 minutes before the program. But tonight was a particularly interesting time. Hi, Mike. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
you doing? Yeah, you saw me running. I was kind of flustered because I wasn't sure. You ever have one of those days where you're not sure if you're breaking the law or not? You know, it's gotten so hard these days to tell what's right and what isn't. I usually park uptown. Take the subway down, which can be an adventure in itself. But this time I didn't have enough time to even do that because there was all kinds of traffic problems. Apparently it was raining a little bit on the island. And, you know, what happens when it rains, people decide to slow down. I got into the parking lot downstairs, which, as you know, has those little electronic parking meters. I hate those things. I've always hated those things. I even hate the analog ones, but the digital ones I really hate, and I'll tell you why. I only had a quarter in my pocket. Actually, I had two quarters in my pocket, I knew I'd have to find more quarters before I came up here, so I figured what I'd do is I'd park and put a quarter in, run to find change, and then put more quarters in. Well, of course, I parked and I put a quarter in, and nothing happened. You know, the old meters, that little arrow would always move, but on the new ones, this happens a lot. When you put a quarter in, nothing happens. So it just basically stole my money, and that's when I got kind of mad. And not only that, there was a cop walking around downstairs, looking at all the meters and giving people tickets who hadn't paid. So I figured I'd get even, and I knew that you know, the technology fails in both directions. It rips people off and steals money, but it also breaks down an awful lot more than the analog system ever did. So I walked around the little parking lot there, looking for meters that said the magic word fail. That's right, fail. It means, I don't know what it means really. It just means that the meter's not working. And then I found one that said fail, and the cop was still walking around out there. So I figured moving my car to the failed meter would be something that you know, would be kind of suspicious looking. So I ran upstairs, got some more backup quarters just in case the failed meter wasn't there when I got back downstairs. Went back downstairs and moved the car to the meter that said fail. But what I'm wondering is, having come up here, I'm being stabbed with pangs of guilt. Did I commit a crime by doing that? You know, I deliberately avoided paying a meter and move to a defective meter. I mean, there's plenty of defective meters out there, and anybody can do this. And I avoided doing this in front of the cop because I didn't want to be chastised for whatever it was I was trying to get away with. But that's my question. Is that a crime? You guys know?
I would think that by purposely moving to a failed meter, it's probably a crime, even if parking at a failed meter isn't. In other words, if you have no choice, mm-hmm. and the meter that you end up at, you're the last person in the lot, if that's failed.
Okay, but then my question is, would it also be illegal for me to park my car in a free space that doesn't have a meter? I mean, it's the same basic rationale.
No, not quite.
It's a legal parking space. A broken parking meter does not make the parking space illegal.
I would guess that the theory would be this. You look for free spaces, failing free spaces. You look for metered spaces. If there are no working metered spaces, you can park in a space that says fail.
Mm-hmm.
But if you work it the other way around,
I just don't see why I should have to, especially after those things ripped me off to start with.
I mean,
that's, you know, you just feel like, you know, doing a
deep in my heart, I agree with you. I'm giving you a likely argument from the worst case scenario files.
I'm just wondering, you know, if that cop was still out there and he saw what I did, what he might be doing to my car right now.
I don't think admitting it on the air is necessarily a good thing if they're running for you.
You know, at least this way I get the public support behind me, if in fact the public does support this kind of action. And it makes you realize the kind of ridiculous things you have to go through just to park a damn car in the city.
One of the few Bloomberg administration policies that I support is steps to reduce the amount of cars in Manhattan.
Bloomberg, he's the guy that runs the radio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe that we have a mayor that a radio station is named after. Can you imagine the Giuliani Radio Network? That would have been laughed at.
Called WABC?
Yeah, but they weren't so blatant about it. It wasn't owned by, you know, by him and his family or whatever the Bloomberg connection is. It seems like such a conflict of interest. I just can't believe it that you know, a major media market. You have these signs saying Bloomberg is great. You know, now they're talking about the radio station. Are they talking about the mayor? We don't know. Maybe they're talking about something else. I don't know. That was the bit of fun for today. Parking the car. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. We are at condition yellow. We've still at condition yellow. It's the Homeland Security state of affairs. A lot of people wrote in to tell us easy ways to check that. If you go to whitehouse.gov/homeland, you will see a handy little you'll see a map and you also find out what color we're at. You know, the thing that strikes me, though, is if we go to, like, you know, color red or whatever the really nasty one is, maybe the web won't work, you know? maybe the internet will be broken or something like that. I don't know. But also, you can find out your Homeland Security state contact. Every state has a contact.
Ooh. Who is my Homeland Security state contact?
I only did one because the page is set up in such a way that you can't print them all out. So I only printed out in New York because I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time at this. Our contact is James Kallstrom. He's the director of the Office of Public Security. And their number, I don't know why you would need to call this person or this office, 212-867-7060. And if you feel so inclined to send a fax, their number is also 212-867-1725. Email info@security.state.ny.us. And they say here, please include your name, address, and contact info so that a representative of NYS Ops can respond to your inquiry. So that's the exciting news as far as that goes. I saw an interesting car on the way over here, too. Maybe somebody can help me with this. It said it was like a police car. It was like a police, you know, station wagon type deals. It said internal intelligence.
What?
Yeah. I thought it was kind of blatant because if you want to run internal intelligence, you don't advertise it to everybody. But it was huge. It was like one of those. You ever see those school police vans? Uh-huh. It says whatever it says, truant officer, or you know, there's a few of those around. It said it in huge letters. It said internal intelligence, and then on the back, it had. He went by too fast for me to be able to read it, and I didn't feel like racing with him. It had the acronym or the initials SORT. So if anybody knows what SORT is, an internal intelligence, it's a yet another agency that's out there.
My immediate guess would be it's not an agency; it's some commercial establishment.
He had the red lights and everything. I mean, he wasn't using them, but he was driving like a madman. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, last scene headed north on the FDR Drive off 34th Street. But that's another issue. So I'm sure somebody out there knows these. Just some of the many adventures you can have driving into the city. See all kinds of fun things.
Never a dull moment in this town.
No, that's certainly true. Anything new with you guys?
Oh, boy.
Okay, let's hear the CNN headline news version of it.
Well, there's not really anything I can say because my lawyer insists that I stay under the radar, even though I'm appearing weekly now on Off the Hook.
Mm-hmm. But the Transit Authority is still gunning for you.
Well, yeah, nothing new there. Essentially, I'm looking for a job. So if anybody out there is looking for someone who's willing to work hard, email me at jeopardy_jim@hotmail.com.
It's a new email address, isn't it?
Well, no, that's my normal one, and then of course there's my alias, which of course is no longer an alias because everybody knows who I am. Red_balaclava@hotmail.
And how do you spell that?
Red is obvious. Underscore is also obvious. Balaclava is BALACLAVA.
And for those of you new to the net, you don't spell underscore.
It's a symbol in the upper right after the numbers. It's on the same key as a hyphen.
Okay, so if somebody wants to hire you, they can email you there. And of course, you have many skills. Your Jeopardy Jim means that you are on the show Jeopardy.
I was on Jeopardy.
So
on
if you need questions answered, you can certainly do that.
Tutoring.
What's the capital of Bangladesh?
Bangladesh.
All right, you're a bit rusty, but...
I'm a bit rusty.
Okay. But, you know, I've seen him answer these questions, folks, and he can do it. He can answer the tough questions.
I've screwed up one. I still owe you money for one that I blew a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, I forget what it was.
Flag of Bhutan or Nepal?
The flag of Nepal is not a square flag.
Right.
Or not
two
rectangle.
Triangles attached.
Looks like a football pennant.
Right, yeah. More or less.
It's kind of neat. Okay.
Not infallible, but I am hardworking.
Yeah. All right, well... Well, hopefully things will work out as far as that goes. And they say when the ordeal might reach a crescendo or...
Oh, the ordeal reaching a crescendo. Yeah, my next court appearance is right after H2K2, mm-hmm. which means that may be my last weekend as a free man, which is an interesting, surrealistic thought.
They're actually talking about putting you in prison for this MetroCard thing.
I'm too visible.
I always said this would lead to bad things. I always said the MetroCard was it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, well, I need the job because number one, I got to pay the lawyer, and number two, the trial won't be for another 6 months minimum.
Mm-hmm. Where will it be held?
Uh, State Supreme Court, New York County. That's Menin.
Okay. Well, I'll certainly be in attendance seeing that one.
That may or may not be a good thing.
I don't know.
We can continue our tradition of attending trials after hacker conventions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should probably start filming.
What, filming the trial?
No, filming me. And,
make another documentary.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let me rest a little bit from the last one, but Freedom Downtime has been out for about a week now, and we're already getting all kinds of feedback from it. Positive feedback, I must say. Here's a couple of letters, both of which are from England for some reason. I'm not quite sure why that is. We just happened to pick two, and they're both from England. My copy of Freedom Downtime arrived this morning in the UK, and I've just finished watching it this evening. A round of applause to all involved with the filming, research, editing, and just general being there. A masterpiece of work and thoroughly enjoyable. It made a rare change to see the other point of view, which just happens to be the truth, and not an overpumped, inflated fantasy fiction story written purely to scaremonger and patronize the viewing public with the side effect of distorting their sense of reality. Once viewed by my friends and colleagues, I will be submitting my copy of Freedom Downtime to Channel 4, which, in case you don't know, it's not the NBC affiliate here in New York with News 4 New York and all that nonsense. No, Channel 4 is a great network over in the UK. They air amazingly cutting-edge programs. They actually could air something like this. I could see it. I hope they will have the foresight and vision to air all 121 minutes to their broad-minded viewers in the UK. Keep up the good work with 2600, DMCA, Off the Hook, and everything else you're involved in. Signed, Richard.
You're involved in the DMCA?
Actually, I guess to me that's not quite the way you want to phrase that. But it's good to get feedback, and we'd like to hear more. Here's another one. Dear Off the Hook, Emmanuel, etc., this morning my copy of Freedom Downtime arrived in the mail. And tonight I sat down and watched the entire thing. Finally, the movie I've been waiting to see for about 2 years was certainly worth the wait. I think that anyone seeing the film will realize just how much of a victim of the judicial system Kevin was. His treatment by the federal government was horrific, something you'd expect to see under a third world dictatorship, not the United States. Sadly, I doubt Kevin will be the last hacker to be treated in this fashion, especially with dumb laws like the DMCA in place. I don't think any of us will ever truly understand what it was like for him, but we at least can help now that he's out of jail, and we will be able to continue to help him once he becomes truly free next year. The film is very well made. I think it shows the complexity of some of the issues in a lighthearted but important way. Some parts of it are funny and other parts familiar of the kind of misrepresentation and crap the hacker community has had to put up with. I'm going to be showing the film at my local 2600 meeting this coming Friday. Signed, Matt from Exeter in the UK. And that's great. It's great that people are out there spreading the knowledge. More info on how to get the film can be found at our website, www.2600.com.
Is it available in PAL format?
No, but you know, this points out that people in the UK can view NTSC. We can view PAL here in the US, which is a better format, but they have the means of viewing NTSC video format. And I know a lot of people are asking about the DVD. Folks, you know, we're mortals here. And getting that VHS out was, it took a lot out of us. It's going to be a while before the DVD comes out. So those of you who are saying, I'm going to sit around and wait for the DVD, you're going to be waiting for a while. Okay, so we intend to do it. We have every intention of doing it, but it's going to take a while. We're going to add things to it, obviously. I'm just sick of answering that question, you know. Everybody says, well, here's the DVD. It's, just be happy the film is finally done. Okay, what else here? Bad news from Canada. I don't know if you guys heard this, but basically, they made it illegal. They made it illegal to have dishes that receive American DSS signals. It's amazing. The Supreme Court of Canada ruled 7-0 on Friday that businesses who sell decoders for foreign-based satellite signals are breaking a federal broadcast law. The Radio Communication Act, according to their interpretation, outlaws the unauthorized decoding of an encrypted signal.
Wait. Unencrypted decoding. Unauthorized decoding.
Mm-hmm.
That's not quite the same as making it totally illegal.
Well, I suppose, except for the fact that, DirecTV and Dish Network, I suppose, could authorize the decoding of the signal, but they wouldn't authorize it if they knew it was going to a different country, so I guess there's some kind of, shenanigans going on as far as making them think that you live in the United States when you actually live in Canada, and that's what they're, saying. It's a very unfortunate development because it sets a very bad precedent over there in Canada. I'm not entirely sure what the law says here. I've asked a number of people, and nobody really seems to know. I guess because not enough people do it over here. But as you know, I have a Canadian DSS dish. And again, it's another question. Am I breaking the law? I don't know. I don't know if that's something illegal to be watching a signal from a different country but that you can't get in this country anyway. Now, of course, in Canada, they're more sensitive to that because I guess people flock to the American networks and American features more than they flock to the Canadian features, and they're worried about losing their culture and all that kind of jazz. But I don't think this is going to do much to keep people from doing that. It's certainly not going to do much to quell resentment towards this kind of thing. The judgment is a victory for Canadian satellite giant Bell Express View, which is suing a small British Columbia satellite provider. You know, I almost bought my equipment from that small British Columbia satellite provider. If you go to smalldish.com, it's either smalldish.com or smalldish.ca, I forget which one it is, but that's the provider that got sued by Bell Express View and apparently has now lost. However, the High Court left it up to the so-called gray market satellite providers to make a strong case in court that the federal law violates freedom of communication guaranteed under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Thousands of gray market satellite users across the country were awaiting the outcome of the case that pitted a small British Columbia business against industry heavyweights. ExpressView appealed to the High Court after failing to persuade lower courts to grant an injunction against Can-Am satellites based in Maple Ridge, British Columbia. So they had already, Dish Company had already won some decisions in smaller courts, but it's the Supreme Court that overrode this. So it's kind of different than it is here when we lose everything. We lose on all levels. At least they won on some levels. So there is some
hope. Won what? The right to watch American television?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that something that's what they're fighting over? But, you know, it's very silly. People should be able to watch whatever they want. They should be able to read whatever they want. I don't know why it's so difficult for you know, these corporations to grasp. I mean, if more people want to read something or watch something else, then, you know, that's their choice. That's their right. And, you know, these are people who are paying for it, too. It's not like they're pirating the signal. Although, you know, there's a lot of debate as to whether or not you can decode a signal that comes into your own home. You know, it's over the air. When I was a kid, you know, this kind of thing would not be even debated. But now it's like, you know, we take it for granted. Anyway, the operators of gray market TV satellite services in Canada will be able to stay in business for a few more days despite the Supreme Court decision last week. A lawyer representing about 20 consumers, retailers, and distributors told CBC News Online that he won an injunction on Friday. It's kind of funny how they report that this guy said that he won an injunction rather than saying that he won the injunction. Like, they don't really believe him. Charles Wagman says it allows operators to do business as usual until May 7th. ExpressView and Star Choice, which is the other satellite provider over there, have long lobbied to make gray market dishes illegal. They argue that the gray market satellites make it difficult for them to compete. The case began in British Columbia as Bell ExpressView sued a local supplier, as we already mentioned. Gray market customers can purchase a satellite receiver for about $400 and pay monthly for programming fed directly from the U.S. and other countries. It's estimated that there are gray market satellite receivers in at least 600,000 homes across the country. That's going to be interesting, too. Are they going to actually go to people's houses and look for the dishes and, you know, charge them with crimes? And I have to say that what I got from Canada cost less than that. They charge less than the American companies, and the programming is better. So I don't really understand what all the fighting is about. It's probably about sports, you know. It's always about sports. Okay, what else? We have a few letters. We're going to take some phone calls. 212-209-2900 is our phone number, as always. Here's a question from a reader. I was wondering if you could give out the code you used for your April 1st prank. I want to get by a really stupid web filter by setting up a server, then accessing your site like you did with cybercrime.gov from my IP. Okay, how do we explain this? You know, as far as... This wasn't a big deal. This wasn't something that involved code. It didn't involve hacking. It just involved changing a file.
We put on funny pointed hats and wave magic wands around.
Well, yeah, but we do that a lot. But this time, all we did was literally... When you run a name server, you have these things called zone files. And if you control a particular internet domain, such as 2600.com, you have the ability to change where that goes. Something has to tell the internet where to go when somebody enters those magical letters into a web browser. And basically what happens is they go to our name server, which we control, and that name server says, go over here. All we did was change the file from saying go over here to go over there. That's all it was. There's no code. The files already exist on the system. If you're just connecting to the internet using a Windows box or, you know, AOL, then you probably will never encounter this kind of thing. But believe me, this is what the net is all about.
And on top of that, it was totally legal because you are the owner of the name server.
Yeah, you know, I believe that. But based on that call we got from the FBI, you know, I don't think they believe that. I think they think that that's some big major
Well, they might believe it if they knew it, but they figured that no one would do that, even on April Fool's.
Well, if we kept our site pointed to cybercrime.gov forever, I think we'd probably wind up in court for some stupid reason. I don't even know what reason it would be, what law they'd claim we're violating, but I'm sure something bad would happen, you know, because they're getting all these hits from people that want to go someplace else. It's more fun and excitement. Dear Off the Hook, I've been working late tonight. I connected to CBC Radio 1 from Montreal to pass the late night. I was expecting to hear the usual interesting mix of news and cultural items that CBC Radio is known for. Instead, I was shocked to hear Radio Netherlands. CBC relays this late night. With interest, I continued to listen. Radio Sweden, Radio South Africa, BBC, Deutsche Welle, Radio Warsaw. They all followed shortly. Each had a 30-minute spot mixing international news, local news, opinion pieces, and cultural items. A quick 5-minute Canadian news separated each broadcast. I know that in New York you are privileged to have the quality of WBAI. Unfortunately, here in Phoenix, Arizona, we have a lame NPR/jazz station. Why can't NPR make a deal to broadcast these incredibly interesting and enlightening international news programs instead of jazz? Signed, Raymond. Well, nothing against jazz, nothing against NPR, but we do need cultural diversity. We don't have enough of it. Radio has turned into music boxes everywhere you look. I think a lot of the problems can be solved by having more community radio stations that can do this kind of a thing. I think there'd be a lot less resentment against entities like NPR if they didn't swallow up frequencies that were meant for non-commercial stations. Wouldn't it be nice if, instead of that, all these clear channel stations that are owned by the same people have multiple stations in the same city, if one of those big, powerful stations turned into an NPR station, then you wouldn't have a million of them at low power on a non-commercial band. You know, those could be college stations or community stations instead, some of which would carry foreign news and all kinds of other cultural things, and you wouldn't have the commercial band being dominated by a single company, you know? That's something that's impossible? No, it's not impossible. The airwaves belong to the public. All you need is an agency with the guts to enforce it. But, you know, I don't think it's going to happen to you.
Public ownership of public goods? You must be some kind of socialist.
Yeah, I guess.
Lock them up.
You know, this the whole thing, I'm watching the happenings with digital TV with a mixture of humor and horror. When digital TV, people don't seem to realize this, but digital TV is coming. You know, this is where they basically make all the analog TV sets stop working, and you have to either get a converter or get a whole new system so you can watch high-definition television. You know, it's mandatory. We have to see, you know, movie-quality pictures even for watching Shop at Home. But the thing that I have a question about, maybe somebody out there has the answer, it seems like all the frequencies are being reallocated. I think this is a great opportunity to expand the FM dial since a lot of the VHF stations take up the part of the spectrum right before FM. Below 88 is Channel 6 and Channel 5 before that. If you open that up, you'd be able to have hundreds of new stations on the air. Instead, they're probably going to give that to some commercial interest. We'll have to see. But what that means is that these new DirecTV stations, not DirecTV, digital TV stations, are taking up different frequencies and different channels. So, for instance, Channel 2 in New York is WCBS. It always has been. They also have something called WCBS-DT, which is digital TV. That is not Channel 2. That's some other channel. That's like Channel 34 or something. I don't even know. They have different allocations for all the channels, and they're all over the place. You know, and sometimes you have two channels right next to each other in the same city. It doesn't follow any rhyme or reason. My question is, are all the channel allocations just going to go out the window? We won't have a News 4 in New York anymore because there won't be a Channel 4. You won't have the little 7 in the circle for Eyewitness News because there won't be a Channel 7. You won't have a Channel 13 that has public television. I mean, there'll be riots in the street when that kind of a thing happens.
I have an opinion on this. I think they will probably maintain that on the grounds that it's a trademark. It's something of value that they've had for years. So what you'll have is some sort of converter, either a computer chip or a table where it'll be WNBC New York, Channel 4, and you'll have to enter X number of digits because it won't be Channel 4 as we know it, where as you analog dial through the spectrum, you go from 2 to 4 to 5 to 7 to 9 to 11, it'll be allocated, as you say, all over the damn place, mm-hmm. and you'll have to punch it in.
Mm-hmm. But even on a cable system, even on satellite systems, they try and replicate the channel numbers as much as possible. I'm just wondering if those days are coming to an end.
Are they able to do that?
You find me a cable system in New York that does not have Channel 2 on Channel 2. You know, I think they probably would sue them if they didn't do that.
All right, they've done that, but I've known more than once Channel 3 has been 31. Mm-hmm. Occasionally 21.
That's because counting to 31 is beyond a lot of people's capability
right.
when they're watching TV. It's just, it's anything that shakes up American culture is dangerous, and this could be dangerous.
Mm.
We have to wonder.
Maybe if we're really lucky, these channels will go away rather than being reassigned to some new number.
You're just in a bad mood today, aren't you?
Yeah.
With this mass media, TV should go away.
Yeah, the TV should go away. TV should go away.
He's in a labor dispute. You should excuse him.
You know, tomorrow's May 1st, speaking of labor disputes.
Mm.
Yeah. But anyway, what else? This is interesting. Speaking of companies and trickery and things like that. It seems Sprint, through their subsidiary ACS Telecom Incorporated, have defrauded consumers by using look-alike phone numbers such as 800-SELL-ATT for those who missed out 800-CALL-ATT. Let's see if that's true. All right? I want to know if that's true right now. Dalton, okay. First, going to call 1-800-CALL-ATT. See what we get.
AT&T. To place a calling card or credit card call, press 1. To place a collect call, press 2. For AT&T customer service, press 3. For 00 info, U.S. directory, press 4. For rates, terms, and conditions, or to place an operator-assisted call, press 0 now.
Okay, so we know what they sound like. Now let's try the evil imitator. 1-800-CELL, CELLATT.
Please enter the area code and telephone number you are calling.
Interesting. No indication of who this is. Let's hit 0. See if they'll tell us.
You have entered an invalid calling number.
Mm.
Please re-enter the area code and telephone number you are calling.
Okay, so the idea is to enter a number, have that number be called collect, and the person accepts
it. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again.
Try 00, see what you get.
And you never... Why would 00 work? 00 is for information. All right.
It's AT&T information. Let's see how far Sprint is imitating them.
There'd be no reason for them to imitate them this far, I don't think, because then we might find out who they are. Plus, it's not Sprint, it's a Sprint
subsidiary.
Please enter the area code and telephone.
It's not going to work.
You have entered an invalid...
Okay. See, I know how scams work, and this is a definite scam. I know exactly what they're trying to do here. If I was to call somebody collect, I'd make an enemy for life, because listen to what happens here. Using the former, a one-minute collect call from Kansas City to Johnson County, a seven-mile difference, this is using 1-800-CALL-ATT, cost between... I mix it up. Using AT&T, it would cost $4.64 to make that collect call. Using 1-800-CELL-ATT, C-E-L-L-A-T-T, that same call would cost between $12.78 and $15.81.
$4 is still a lot of money for 7 miles.
Now, there's something else here. Now, there's a Sprint number called 1-800-CELL-ATT. one dime. O-N-E-D-I-M-E. See what that sounds like.
Welcome to Sprint's 1-800-1-DIME. For English instructions, press 1.
Para servicio en español, presione 2.
They always sound happier when they speak Spanish. I don't know why. Okay, so if you make a mistake, instead of dialing 1-800-1-DIME, you dial 1-800-1-DIM, D-I-M-M, which is what you probably are if you dial that, you get this.
Please enter the area code and telephone
same
number
thing.
You are calling.
Same exact company. So they've set up all over the place. The cost with Sprint for that collect call we mentioned before would be about $3.50 compared to over $10 with ACS. It's funny because they're imitating Sprint, the company that they're a subsidiary of. So not a very nice subsidiary. The killer cost isn't a permanent charge, but the call connect fee, which ranges from around $10 to around $15. In a related tactic, when the FCC required payphones to allow users to pick their long-distance carrier for collect calls using the operator, long-distance companies such as Whatever or I Don't Care popped up. This is real. They actually have names like this, Whatever and I Don't Care, because if you're asked what long-distance company do you want, and you say, I don't care, you get, I don't care long distance. This is amazing, but it's true. So callers who are indifferent to what company connected the call would be charged exorbitant rates through phantom entities. And this kind of stuff just continues every day. Now, this is kind of interesting. I recently discovered, this all comes from a listener called JPX. I recently discovered using my deactivated Sprint PCS wireless phone that I was able to call collect using wireless collect roaming. The cost is $1.95 per minute plus an unknown call connect fee, probably $5 to $20. I'm too scared to try. The reason my phone is deactivated is because Sprint recently charged me $2,500 for 2 months of service after they failed to switch my plan to the $150 monthly plan. They aren't getting my money no matter what. Now, here's something very interesting. This person made a discovery that you can easily steal someone else's Sprint PCS phone.
What?
Not just by walking up to them and taking it. Yes, you can still do that. But there's something else that you can do. Mike, I believe you have a Sprint PCS phone there, though. Do you know?
I'm not letting you steal it.
Well, no, don't give it to me. Just hold it tight in your hand so that I can't steal it. But what I want you to do is tell me, is there an ESN number on the back?
Hold it up to the microphone so we can all see.
Yeah, there is an ESN number on the back. You had to take your battery off to get to it, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no numbers here.
Right. No numbers on the... Okay.
Emmanuel can see it, but none of the listeners can. There's no numbers there.
Right.
And there's a bunch of numbers inside. I don't know what they are, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you need an ESN number, which I believe is available on most phones on the back. If people out there using Sprint PCS phones can look at the back of their phones, I think you'll see that in many cases. In any event, if I'm hanging out with you socially or something like that, and I ask to see your phone, as many of us do all the time, you can easily get that ESN number. It's not hard. Do we agree on that?
How many digits is this number?
It's kind of long, isn't it?
I have two numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a serial number of some sort.
One of the first number is 11 digits, mm-hmm. and the second is a bunch of numbers, and some of which are actually letters.
Uh-huh.
A total of 8 of these characters.
Okay.
Now, according to this person, if you have that number and the phone number, which obviously is very easy to get, and as security, the last 4 digits of the person's social security number, you can change the service. You can say, I'm going to change from this phone to that phone. And that's all you need. It's that easy. So how hard is it to get someone's ESN? Well, if you can look at their phone for a moment, you get their ESN just by looking at that little number on the back. If you already know their phone number. And getting the Social Security number, only the last 4 digits, that's ridiculously simple. So, yeah, it's quite easy to do this. Now, I don't want to just say this without verifying it. Let's see if this is true. Let's, first of all, call our friends at 800 information. Can I have a pen, please? Anybody have a pen? Thank you very much.
Our friends aren't home.
Toll-free directory assistance, powered by TellMe. Say the full name of the listing you want.
Sprint PCS.
Okay, Sprint PCS. If that's not what you wanted, press 1. Otherwise, one moment while I look up that number.
Just give me the number, all right?
Here's the number for Sprint PCS Customer Care. 800-480-4727.
I don't understand.
Once again...
Yeah, I don't understand why it takes so long for them to give you the number when it's a computer to start with. You know?
Maybe they're making it sound like a human.
But the human that they fired was quicker than that. It doesn't make any sense. Okay, let's see how long it takes to actually get a human here.
Welcome to Sprint PCS, the clear alternative to cellular. Para elegir español, favor de pulsar uno ahora.
Doesn't she sound happier?
Yeah.
Please listen carefully. The options have changed. If you have a Sprint PCS phone and you have a question, please press 1. If you are calling to activate a Sprint
PCS phone, get me to a recording, I'm pretty sure.
2. To purchase a Sprint PCS phone with a major credit card or debit card, please press 3. To purchase a Sprint PCS phone with cash or check, please press 4 for the nearest retail store location. If you are calling about Sprint Home Long Distance Service, please press 5. To repeat these options, please press 9.
And no option to talk to a human. Okay, we'll press 1.
You need to activate your Sprint PCS phone, please press 1. If you have questions regarding your phone or service, please press 2. To purchase accessories for your Sprint PCS phone, please press 3. If you would like to purchase a Sprint PCS phone, please press 4.
I think 2 is the closest.
Thank you for calling Sprint PCS. You can also access your account information at www.sprintpcs.com.
Okay, but I don't have an
Please
account.
Enter your PCS telephone number, including area code.
This is the problem I'm having. Okay, I'm just not going to enter anything now, and hopefully they'll say he's having trouble. Run to his assistance.
The number you have entered is not valid.
I didn't enter anything.
You will be prompted to re-enter.
Oh, I will.
Please enter your PCS telephone number, including area code.
I'm not entering a damn thing, okay? This is a standoff.
The number you have entered is not valid.
You just don't get it, do you?
You will be prompted to re-enter.
Is this going
to
go on all night?
Please enter your PCS telephone number, including area code.
Jeff has more patience than you do.
It's a computer, I know, but it can't possibly go a fourth time.
I find it insulting. It tells you it's going to prompt you before it prompts you.
Please hold while we connect your call.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is what you got to do.
Welcome to Sprint PCS. To hear airtime usage, account balance, or make a payment, press 1. For pricing information,
they have a different person saying the number.
Or to change or disconnect your service, press 2. For help with voicemail, dropped calls, or equipment problems, press 3. For information on your handset features or store location,
I want a human
press
being.
4.
Try the personals.
Hey, look, there's 3 cleaning ladies on the camera. They're having a conference outside the hallway.
To hear airtime usage, account balance, or make a payment, press 1.
Okay.
For pricing information,
I can either try to hit a 0 now.
Or to change or disconnect your service, press 2. For help with voicemail, dropped calls, or equipment problems,
do I hit 0 or do I wait? Those are my only 2
options. For information on your handset features or store location,
press 2. Who's going to go to another voicemail hell?
Okay. Up to you, then.
I'll wait.
That's another phone company we should try. Up to you, then.
To repeat these choices, press 8.
That's different.
Yeah, it is different. We're definitely going somewhere else now.
We appreciate your business.
Okay.
Please stay on the line for the next available Sprint PCS specialist.
So see how long this takes.
Such a refreshing change to have waiting rewarded. So many times we've hit voicemail systems where...
Yeah. Uh-oh. All right, well, this is musical hold, at least. Doesn't sound like one of those annoying ads. Okay, as long as they don't talk, I'll be happy. And this way we know when they pick up the phone, so they won't catch us. But
for quality and training purposes, your call may be monitored and recorded. All of our specialists are currently assisting other customers. Please hold, and your call will be answered in the order it was received. To ensure the highest level of quality service, your call may be monitored.
You said that. Do we get the music at least? We've got music.
It's our music.
Yeah.
Sprint PCS reminds you that when using your wireless phone or car, your first priority is to drive safely.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, safety is your most important call.
Yeah, it takes two people to monitor.
To purchase hands-free accessories, please visit www.sprintpcs.com.
Don't you hate being told to visit a website when you're on hold on the phone?
At 1-800-974-2221.
If we get the music back, I can go into some other mail that we got.
Now you can check the balance on your account simply by...
All these things I can do if I actually get through.
You are not charged for airtime for this call. Now you can learn about new products and services...
Yeah, they never interrupt these, so I might as well keep talking.
...simply by pressing star 2 talk on your Sprint phone.
A listener writes in to say that the religious site we referred to last week is a hoax.
Oh.
Seemed like a hoax. Hang on.
Now there's another way to save time.
She raised her voice.
PCS. Sprint PCS automatic payments. With automatic payments...
On the page objectiveministries.tripod.com/members.html, you will see the supposed members of this ministry. Although, these are real people, aren't they?
Read them.
The person...
PCS is committed to your satisfaction.
Dr. Paley, I believe, is the person we read last. He's a real person, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, apparently, this is his email address on that site is drdinosaur@covenant.org. It just seems like kind of a strange name to give somebody if you're not making fun of them. Dr. Dinosaur. It's a very good hoax if it is a hoax. This person went on at some length about Apple Computer being the instrument of the devil and that kind of thing.
You'll never be left stranded on the road again.
This person actually went so far as to email the webmaster to ask him if Dr. Paley was a member at their church. He checked with the staff and confirmed that no such person goes to that church, that the email address is fictitious. And so much for that. But it was pretty funny. What else here? Here's a security hole involving Kinko's. And we will take phone calls. 212-209-2900.
Have you had a chance to visit Sprint PCS online?
Not yet, no. Well, we'll do it as soon as we get off the phone with you. How about that? I am submitting a corporate security privacy issue to you in the hopes that Kinko's will one day do something about this. I already filled out and sent a comment card to their headquarters, but it is doubtful it got to the right hands. The problem is you can easily, and this is really kind of interesting, we should go to Kinko's after the show.
Sure.
Just to see if it's possible. Not to do anything bad. You can easily recover upwards of 800 to 900 files from previous users' sessions because logging out does not completely obliterate all files on the hard disk, including browser cookies that may contain SSN. Mike, your SSN might be there. That's how I could get it. There's all kinds of ways I can get it. All right.
I would have to go to Kinko's, rent a computer, and enter my number.
Don't say you've never done it.
I've never done it.
I asked you not to say that. Also, credit card information, telephone, other information. All you have to do at any Kinko's is go to their Windows box, go to Start, Programs, Utilities, Norton Utilities, 2001 Unerase Wizard, and click the Next button.
Thank you for calling Sprint PCS. My name is Joe. How may I help you?
Yes, hi. I just had a question. I've got a... I'm getting a Sprint phone, and I'm thinking of upgrading to another phone, but I'm not going to be home when I do this. What kind of information will I need to give to be able to upgrade my phone? I mean, I'll have my old phone with me, but what will you require from me?
You mean from the new phone?
Yeah, so I want to switch from my old phone to a new phone. When I call in, what do I have to give you?
Okay, what we would need is an ESN number. That can be found on the battery pack of the phone, either on the battery pack itself or on the compartment after you remove the battery pack.
Okay.
It'll be an 11-digit number. It either starts with a 1 or a 2.
Okay.
And basically, that's all we're going to need in your account information, which...
Well, that's what I'm wondering. What account information will you need from me? I don't have to bring my phone bills with me or anything like that.
No, sir. You'll just need your Sprint PCS number. You just have to verify your first and last name and your password on the account.
Password. How is the password assigned?
I'm sorry?
How is the password assigned?
It should have been assigned when you actually activated the phone.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you can't remember the password, I mean, as long as you can verify his social security number, you'll be fine.
Okay, well, that's great then. That's all I needed to know. Okay, thanks very much for your help.
You're welcome, sir.
Take care.
Sponsor PCS.
All right. Well, I guess that does answer that question. I don't know if passwords are mandatory anyway, or if they just use the SSN as a default, but usually... I'm sorry, I turned down your microphones. Go ahead.
I have a password.
You have a password. Did they insist that you have the password when you signed up with them?
Because I didn't argue about it.
Okay, but I know the phone company, you can have a password on your account, you know, the Verizon, or you might not have a password on your account. It's different. It's different for every company. But if you forget your password, as this guy said, there are ways to remind you. They can either... I've had phone company representatives give me real, real good hints as to what my password was and helped me guess it. And we're very happy when I did guess it. But again, if you just have your social security number, maybe even the last four digits, as this listener said, that might be enough. So, all right, let's go to the phones. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Okay. Some time ago, there was a thing that that Verizon used to have. If you dialed like a 3 or 4 digit number, you got like a local... DX line or...
A local... I'm not sure what you mean.
Okay, if you dial like 958...
Yeah.
There's a recording that repeats your phone number.
Right.
And then there was another, I think 9901, if you dialed any 3 digits and then...
Okay, if you dial the exchange followed by 9901, it'll tell you the central office, the location and other exchanges in that central office.
Oh, okay, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Because I tried that and... I got something different.
And I think that only works in the Northeast. I'm not sure if that works in other parts of the country. There might be a different numbering format. It's very,
well, I'm in Queens.
It's very handy. Yeah, it'll work for you. It's very handy to find out where a particular exchange is.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi there, Manuel.
What's up?
Just reacting to a couple of remarks you made, starting from the earliest at the top of the hour. First of all, parking your car at a meter with no time in it is not a crime in any event.
Okay.
It's only an infraction. You know, it's... parking legal. It's purely a civil matter. Next highest thing will be a violation, still not a crime.
But I have nothing to worry about.
Well, you might get a ticket.
What would I get a ticket for? The meter's broken.
No, I think that's legitimate defense. I believe even if there was a paper bag over a meter, there was a case brought in Manhattan a long time ago regarding that, and that was ruled legal, too, after several rounds of appeals, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an attorney, but I remember the case. Moving on, James Carlstrom, I think you mentioned, is now head of the awareness level information, whatever that nonsense is about. You may recall he used to be the head of the New York FBI regional office.
Right.
You might recall, did that real bang-up job in cracking the mystery of TWA Flight 800.
Yeah, we all know what happened now.
Right. He retired shortly after that or kicked upstairs. I remember him saying at a press conference in response to a question, was it a missile? He said, well, I don't know what I mean, frankly.
okay.
And in the comparisons between PAL, CCAM, you might add, and NTSC, in the trades, the last system, NTSC, is known to stand for never the same color. So lousy.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
That's certainly true.
And in this country, regarding the decoding of satellite stuff, or encryption schemes. In this country, a while back, there was a case brought by the makers of the Video Cipher 2. You might know even more about that than I do. But it was in Long Island, and the person was advertising selling a decoder just for that purpose, and he defied the courts to prosecute him, which they did. I believe that was never, a conviction was never upheld. It's never been resolved, and they moved to a different scrambling system to avoid that whole thing.
Yeah, that's why it never really got followed up on, I guess, because they simply changed the technology.
Exactly. The over-the-air channels, the VHF channels 2 through 13, is, for the moment, identical on cable systems all over the place,
right.
over-the-air, to the over-the-air. And the Channel 3 example, the thing that your other host or guest pointed out, Channel 3 was never a real over-the-air channel anyway, so they can remap it to anywhere they want.
Right, but they could have put it on 31, you know, with the normal channel. I guess they just put it there, they have them all in the same area.
Right, well, those channels are used as, they're known as open channels, too, because you can hook other components streaming out of that channel, unless you want to run another VCR and have its own separate tuner work off of Channel 3 or the open channel, whatever that may be. That's why that seems to be in effect.
Okay.
Okay, thank
thanks.
You.
Thanks for calling. This letter also concerning something that Rebel brought up last week. Remember the Applebee's copyright notice? This person says, I heard on your last show that someone had called in and asked why at Applebee's restaurants, TVs have a copyright warning on them. I work at an Applebee's here in Jersey, and this was the answer I got when I asked months ago. The company that provides, basically it's a sign that says the audio on this TV is not turned up for copyright reasons. The company that provides the music that's played in the background of the restaurant forbids the playing of other media while its services are in use. I know it sounds pretty lame, but they didn't go into much detail. Simply put, they can't because the music company won't let them. Go figure. I wonder if on September 11th, they couldn't turn up the audio of the TV set. They had to listen to, like, Barry Manilow or something instead because of copyright restrictions. That is the silliest thing. I advise everybody to go in with, music boxes of all sorts and use other media.
Go in with your FM radio that also picks up TV, tune it to whatever's on the TV in Applebee's, and put the sound up.
Exactly. That letter from Adrenaline, thanks very much for writing in. Let's take another phone call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
What's up?
Okay, got the information about parking meters here.
Oh, okay.
Looking at the Department of Transportation
website.
Well,
people went to a lot of trouble.
Well, it's actually pretty quick.
Yeah.
I just knew where to look, so.
Okay, so what's up?
If a meter is broken, you can park at for a maximum of 1 hour, even if the posted sign is for a longer time period. If the meter is missing, you can park for the maximum amount of time posted on the signs.
Okay, and if the meter is there and it says fail, what about that?
Well, that's broken.
That's broken, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the quick answer. I mean, you know, there are means of reporting it, too.
So I can't leave my car there for 3 days, then. I have to leave it there for, if it's a two-hour meter, for 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever it
says.
Well,
1 hour.
What, only 1 hour?
1 hour. If the meter's broken, which is fail.
Oh, that kind of sucks, because I parked the car before the show, and the show is an hour, so I'm kind of like...
Yeah, that would be a problem.
I'm set up to lose here.
What you better run.
You should have done is taken off the meter.
Yeah, I should have done that. That would have made sense.
That would definitely solve the problem.
It worked out for Paul Newman, didn't it? Okay.
Later.
Thanks for the info and proof that BIR listeners can answer almost any question. Good evening. You're on the air. Okay, well, you had your opportunity there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. They weren't playing any music when I was in the Applebee's when I was there.
Then you need to alert the music company, because obviously there's even more shenanigans going on here than we can possibly get into. But thanks for the tip, and we'll see you at the meeting on Friday. Oh, by the way, there is a 20-second meeting all around the world this Friday. And no, we won't be trading cyanide and subway systems, despite what Warwick may tell you.
Maybe also, you won't.
I don't endorse that kind of thing. There's also H2K2 coordinating meetings going on at the New York meeting. So if you want to get involved in H2K2, just show up and seek out people who look like they're interested too. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah. Toll-free directory.
It's very rude to call twice. Good evening. You're on the air.
Toll-free directory.
It's rude to call three times. One more time and we'll have to take action. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Is this OTH?
Yes, OTH, off the hook.
Yes, definitely. All right, I was just wondering about, what was it? Oh, the Samsung phone, the Sprint PCS.
Uh-huh.
I have a Samsung phone, and ESN on the back.
Yeah.
The first one is decimal, and the next one is hex.
Okay.
Up and bottom, and also on the Samsung SCH8500 phone.
Uh-huh.
There is a test mode. And another menu where you can list the ESN and a bunch of other, like, the lock code and all the NAM information.
Yeah, that's right. You can get it on the screen.
Yeah.
It's different for every phone. But yeah, you can generally get this information. It's really not hard to find, even on someone else's phone.
Right.
All right. Thanks for your call.
That's all. Sure.
We're out of time. And a lot of information tonight. A lot of interesting things going on out there. But if you have a Sprint PCS phone, you've got to be a little bit careful who you show it to. And I imagine the meetings this week will be kind of active with people asking to see each other's Sprint PCS phones. So we'll just have to see what comes out of that. Maybe another Wired story. Who knows? That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back again next week with another action-packed edition of Off the Hook. And don't forget, we have a fundraiser coming up next month.
this May Day, listen to a special two-hour program from Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston. The first radio edition of Pacifica Matters, a national program on Pacifica's governance. Broadcast live on KPFT and webcast to the world on PacificaMatters.net. This show will feature listener activists from all five Pacifica stations expressing what's important to listeners, like elections, the new bylaws, the mission, and protecting our valuable network. Tune in to this two-hour special Wednesday morning, May 1st at 10 a.m. in Houston, 8 a.m. in Los Angeles and Berkeley, 11 a.m. in New York and Washington, D.C. Outside of Houston, you can listen on the Internet at PacificaMatters.net. Pacifica Matters, maiden broadcast on KPFT.